It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a Macworld iWorld wrap-up. Some of the best apps from Macworld are actually here in studio with us. At least the creators of them are. We also will take a look at Apple's amazing quarterly results and more. It's all next with Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 284, recorded January 31st, 2012. More iPhones than Twinkies. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by PDF Pen for iPad from Smile, the mobile version of Smile's award-winning PDF editor. Use it to sign a contract, make corrections, fill out an application, and much more. And get it for just $9.99 on the iTunes App Store right now. Learn more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. And by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at ford.com/technology. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We are going to cover the Macintosh in all its glory, including iOS. And joining us right now, going from left to right, Andy. Actually, you're right to my left. Andy, that way. Andy and I come from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Look at me.
Stage left, audience right.
Or is it audience? Clearly, you were not in the drama club in high school. Or else these stage left, audience left. Monitor right, audio right. You've got to know these things.
You know, I knew downstage because the stages used to be tilted, so I could remember you downstage, you know, you roll down hill, but I never could get stage left, stage right.
Exit stage left.
Hello, Andrew. You're back in Boston from your trip to the West Coast.
Back in the land of the CAD.
Yeah. And you've got a Russian cosmonaut in a picture behind you. Don't say everybody's going to guess. We'll make it a contest. We should do this from now on. What the hell is Andy's wallpaper? It's a brand new.
Yeah, it's a few weeks ago. I put a new folder on my Dropbox of interesting things to like have behind me when I podcast. And so every time I'm like on the web, and I say, "Ooh, that's a good photo. Ooh, I should have that behind me in a podcast." And it goes in the folder. And
good. And there you have it. We'll ask why later. Also joining me from Germany is Oliver Breidenbach. He is with Boink Software, BOINX.com. Whenever Oliver's in town, we try to get him in. Hi, Oliver.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being here. Also, was in town for Macworld. I think this is going to be a Macworld rehash or deconstruction. Gene McDonald is here from Smile Software. Great to see you. And congratulations. You were the app of the show.
Well, we're in hot competition with Oliver on who had the most awards, but we both won Best of Show.
It's really awesome. So. Oh, you did too? That's
great.
Yes. And you won it for stop motion on the iPad.
Yes.
And you won it for PDF Pen on the iPad.
That's right.
Tells you something, doesn't it? Did it have to be an iPad app?
I think so.
I think so. And Ken Ray, do you have an iPad app?
No, I have an iPhone app.
You do?
But I didn't win Best of Shows, so thanks for bringing it up.
It's painful, painful. Ken Ray, Mac OS Ken is also a podcaster and Mac expert, Mac pundit. Great to have you all. So, Ken, you came out, as did Andy, from the East Coast to Macworld Expo. You're coming back next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
I mean, do you want to talk about it?
It's kind of small, wasn't it?
No. I don't know. I was reading a few things when I came back, and the best thing that I found to sum it up is something that Chris Forsman over at Ars Technica wrote. As a tech journalist, Macworld has gradually become less interesting. As a user of Apple's products and a geek in general, however, the show has become perhaps more interesting.
Nicely put.
I was glad to see him print that because I just kept having this sort of feeling like this feels better to me somehow, but I'm not sure why. And that's really the way. There was a whole different energy, a whole different vibe. Yeah, I'll definitely be back. Small though it may have been.
And Gene, you said no. Now you know both you and Oliver go as exhibitors,
right?
So it's a value to use an exhibitor.
It's a fantastic value.
It must be decreasing value. I mean, Adobe's not there, Microsoft's there, not Apple's not there. Well, there's a reason these big companies aren't going. HP was the biggest company there, and I wondered why.
Well, I think that you could argue, and I certainly have, is that with no Adobe and no Apple, the people who come to Macworld are Mac users. Not, I mean, there's some people who are not Mac users yet, but Mac people want to see Mac software. And so last year we were mobbed at our booth because it was just us and BusyCal practically.
Yeah.
And so we said we're definitely coming back, and well, it was very busy.
You say an interesting thing because I don't know how many booths there were there. It wasn't a whole lot. Well, let's put it this way. It seemed much smaller than the iLounge at CES.
I've never been.
Okay. Do we have a number on it, though? Because when I first walked in, my feeling was that there were actually more vendors. And I guess this might have been a nice thing to ask Paul while we were out there.
I should ask.
My feeling was that there were more vendors, but in a smaller space. Like the Mac software side where Gene was. Nuance was over there. Nuance last year had a bigger space. And this year they didn't. And so I don't know if that means that Nuance decided... I don't know if that means that Nuance decided to reduce its footprint or if the whole Mac side was smaller. I don't really know. But to me, for a while, it felt like there were many more people there, just crammed in tighter.
I thought it was just a more target-rich environment than it was last year. I got to admit that I was a little bit disappointed with last year's show because it really didn't take me long at all to feel as though not only had I walked through every aisle of the show last year, but also that I have seen everything I would want to see. I have had in-depth conversations with as many exhibitors as have in products I'm really interested in. This year, I had my schedule was really compressed. And I, out of 2 hours, I still was about 25% short. There was still like one aisle and a half that I haven't covered yet. But it had more interesting things in it, more things you might recognize from like a Kickstarter campaign 6 or 7 months ago. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine she's been a friend of mine for about 10, 15 years. She is like very, very active in independent Mac and iOS developers as a PR rep. And she was saying that she felt as though she wished that she had gotten more of her clients here because she felt as though it was a very, very good value. Every single member of the Mac and iOS press that you would want to have covering your product or covering your service was here. And as you say, there was no Adobe, there was no Apple, there was no huge, like a gargantuan vendor to exhibitor to distract people's attention from it. So I got a lot more value out of it. I certainly got at least 4 or 5 columns worth of information out of it. So I was pretty happy. My opinion was actually a little bit topsy-turvy from Ken's in that I thought it was certainly a good show for me. I thought it was an entertaining show, a huge step forward in terms of the content, because I thought it was a more successful marriage of the old-fashioned tutorials on how to get things done with your devices, as well as just entertaining exhibitions like the interviews with the South Park creators, stuff with Jonathan Frakes, that sort of stuff. But when I was introduced to people who had flown like halfway across the world to be here, I was glad that they were there. I'm not sure that if they had asked me before they traveled, should I spend $2,000 to fly out to Macworld, iWorld, I would have to say, how much money do you have? Because if this is, it was an entertaining show. I'm not sure if I would, I personally, in my budget as a freelance journalist in a print medium that's slowly dying, that I would spend $2,000 to attend this show. But it was very, very good. I'm really excited to see what happens next year because it's definitely on the correct trajectory. And I thought that this year's show was a good value for a lot of people.
It is a transitional year, obviously, from... And maybe that's partly what, for me, I'm still living in the past. 27 years Macworld's been going on. Now, I do have the press release, which IDG just released. Thank you, IDG, for sending this out here. 25,000 people, they said, 40% of whom were first-time attenders, 300 exhibitors and sponsors, 100 new products, 75 tech talks, and, of course, a much-reduced price for the iFan Pass, only $80 if you wanted to go to that track. But it's a transitional... I mean, it really is part of a transition from the way it used to be. I mean, it used to be you'd go to Moscone Center on Macworld Expo Day, and the palpable excitement, there was the traffic jams, the number of people. And, of course, that's because Steve Jobs was speaking, Apple was there. It was a very different event now. Oliver, will Boinks continue to go?
Certainly. I think it was very worthwhile for us to come over. Let's do the litmus test. Andy, did you stop by our booth?
Unfortunately, I think you were okay. we're looking back to the left.
I missed that too. I saw Oliver at our
You missed us too.
Well, you making it up, no?
Yeah. I saw you. I did go by you, but I completely missed your booth, and I apologize. Where was your booth?
It was actually in the Mobile Apps showcase.
It just shows you that it is big enough.
It's big enough to miss something, yeah.
Go ahead, and then I'll say something.
It was worthwhile for us, and the strategy clearly was that we wanted to have like a little pod there on the Mac Mobile App Showcase as sort of a meeting point. And the meeting point, on the one hand for the users, and on the other hand, of course, for people like yourself, the press, and other important multipliers. And I think it worked out quite well. Notwithstanding that we won two awards, actually.
Yeah, that's not so bad. What was the other one?
Mac Observer, Editor's Choice.
Very nice.
And Smile won that as well. And the Smile booth was on the same side of. We were neighbors on the Mobile App Showcase, and so we decided to petition for next year to call this the award zone, because between the two of us, we had like five awards.
And I have to say, it's not
she's ahead one.
It's not why you and Gene are here. It's just because you're friends and we love you. But hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We got the award winners here, ladies and gentlemen.
Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman of Mac.
Oh, yes. multi award winners.
Do I look like Dustin Hoffman?
Oh yeah. Later.
Yeah, Meryl Streep.
Oh, okay.
No, I look like Meryl Streep.
That's not nice.
The thing that kind of really bummed me out was the Mac OS X Alley. You make Mac software. You both make Mac software. Is this some sort of reflection of the fact that Apple's kind of become not a computer company but a consumer electronics company? Is OS X dead? Is software for OS X dead? Why was it such an alley?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we did this last year in 2011, and we were in what was called like the Indie Pavilion or whatever. And there were actually fewer booths, but the way that it was set up, it was easier to see them. It didn't have quite this like, the back alley
it
of
really
Macworld.
It was. I was stunned. They even had signs. It almost looked like, don't.
You must be 21.
Abandon all desktops, ye who enter here, whatever. It was like, oh my God, it's the OS X zone.
Yeah, in fact, we decided at the last minute to take a booth in mobile apps as well, because we were showing an iPad app, and
right.
we weren't quite sure what the traffic
if
was going to
go
be.
Back there. Yeah.
You know, often that area is very, even though it's out of the way, it's very popular because everybody, like you say, you want to go to Tiny Town. That's where like the new
exciting.
Things. But the way it was set up this year, I would say bad feng shui.
Right.
And it was still busy.
Was.
I think that's what it
maybe
was. I don't think
that's all it is. It was just where it was.
There were definitely more Mac developers like us there this year than last.
So you know,
and it was more interesting stuff there as well.
Yeah.
This is actually great because both of you are started as Mac developers who have just now gone into iOS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of you did some small iOS stuff.
Yeah, we did iOS stuff before, but
it wasn't a big part of your.
No.
And now doing iStop Motion on the iPad is a big thing.
That's a big strategic thing, you know.
Well, and let me ask you about that. So why is it so strategic to get on the?
I think iStop Motion for the Mac has a huge market in education, and we see a lot of interest in the education market for the iPad because it's much cheaper and also because of the immersiveness its interface provides. So if we want to stay in the business in education, I think it's important to have a solution there.
I mean, if I may, without having used it yet, and that's the stupid thing, it's like the thing that Forsman again wrote last week about how iBooks were going to be the GarageBand of iBooks. iStop Motion is sort of like the GarageBand of stop action motion pictures, in that you kind of feel like you can use
Thanks.
It. I bought it over the holidays, but I haven't used it yet because I don't have the little tripod that I want because I want to use the remote thing from the camera. But I mean, for what you guys are doing, there's just something. So I spent $5 and I haven't used it yet, but. Yeah,
is that all it is?
$5.
Yes.
I've got it.
For now.
Well, but that's part of the issue, isn't it? You can't make as much money on it either.
Well, I mean, it depends on how many more devices are there and how many more people buy it, actually. You know, so
interesting.
It's a numbers game.
It could be,
you know,
as profitable.
It could be.
There could be a bunch of people like me sitting out there going, yeah, I want to make a cartoon, and they buy it, and then they don't make a cartoon.
Well, that's actually, I mean, that's a huge difference. I think, personally, from a couple of years back when you were making software, now you make software, and a lot of people buy it who might not ever use it, because it's just like, you know, oh, this looks nice in the store, and then I go, okay, download. And to make the development numbers work, you actually have to have thousands of those users, and for every one that really seriously uses your stuff, you know, if you are trying to do to make money with a productivity app or anything that's not a game, and it's not made over the weekend by some student in his basement, you need to activate a lot more customers than used to before, and a lot of them will not actually even use your software. That's kind of strange from developer point of view.
It is an entry. What? It's the entry drug.
Yes,
yeah. It's how you get people in. Yeah. How about you, Gene? Is it strategic for you to be on the iPad? Do you have to be now?
I think you have to be.
Yeah.
I mean, for a lot of reasons, but just looking around, how many people are using iPads and how that's just going to continue. And
yeah.
I mean, I think people start to look at their Macs like they're a little bit like out of date, just the whole concept of carrying around this much hardware and right. have to open it up and so forth. So, I mean, I'm not saying we need it to go into iPads this year, absolutely, but we could not, you know, say, well, we're never going to do that. We're going to stick with Macs. We like them better because I think somebody in the chat room said the writing is on the wall for mobile computing is where it's at. So
yeah, I hope I didn't say Apple is killing OS X or OS X is dying. I mean, it can't because, both of you are using OS X to develop.
I think it's going to be around for a while.
It's going to be around forever, at least as a development tool, if not for a pro tool. Although, I have to say, even in the pro space, Apple seems to be turning its back on pros. Look at Final Cut 10, which is...
Well, they just announced yesterday or today, they announced a new version that brings back a lot of the fun stuff.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Because we were literally on the verge of abandoning it for Premiere, only because it wouldn't write to our SAN.
I don't know about that, but it has multicam support and a bunch of other things they put
in there. That's big. So they're getting those features back in. That actually reassures me a little bit that Apple isn't turning its back.
Yeah.
That might have been an announcement Apple could have done last week.
And it works really well on the 27-inch Mac. So I'm like, you know, I think maybe the Mac Pros, the desktops that we used to know, you know, these monolithic things, they may be on the way out. You know, but because like an iMac is now, you know, at least as powerful as the Mac Pro, and there's actually no reason to, you know, with things like Thunderbolt, there's no reason to have a big box anymore. Then,
right? I'm now updating Final Cut. Thank you.
Okay. So the network is going down.
Yeah, anybody who wants to surf, you know, just stop for a while. 10.03 came out today. Multicam editing with automatic sync and support for mixed formats, mixed frame rates up to 64 camera angles, and advanced chroma keying with control. We have to get Alex to tell us what he thinks of this next week. Advanced chroma keying with controls for color sampling and edge quality. That's interesting. Media relink for manual reconnect. They've needed this badly. Manual reconnect of projects and events to new media, ability to import and edit layered Photoshop graphics, XML 1.1 with support for primary color grades, effect parameters, audio keyframes, beta version of broadcast monitoring with third-party PCIe and Thunderbolt I.O. devices. Interesting. Andy,
also interesting to notice the size of the download because...
it's only 322 megabytes. Wow, what a relief.
Yeah, so they finally managed to turn on the... Yeah. Incremental
vector update. Yeah, because that's about half the
updates. Yeah, updates. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. That's actually maybe that's even bigger news. They finally can just patch instead of completely re-download. Andy, were you about to say something? I didn't mean to.
All I was going to say is that macOS will never go away. I mean, they might see these two operating systems. They might see these two operating systems take more hints from each other.
Right.
But I always think that, Mac OS and iOS are kind of like a married couple where one spouse is a handcrafted, the traditional flute maker, and the other one has a very good, well-paying, middle-level civil service job, where Mac OS is the boring, stable one that that they don't do exciting stuff, but it's stable, it's steady, and it's reliable. It's the stuff that you need to have happen. iOS, I would never want to live in iOS because it's always going to be a one window interface.
Well, we are seeing some iOSification. Did you see the new airport utility, Airport Extreme Utility?
Oh, yeah.
They just released it yesterday. Apple did for the desktop. It looks exactly like the iPad one. It's one screen. It really feels dumbed down. You click big button. I mean, I think we're definitely moving in that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Oliver, you sound like you might be in the camp that thinks that Macintosh computing is going away.
It most certainly is. It's just a matter of time, right? And I think if you look at the
five
two
years,
operating
50
systems,
years, 100 years.
Yeah, well, no, maybe five, maybe 10.
You'll have to have a desktop.
I think if macOS goes away, it'll be replaced by another really specifically desktop oriented operating system.
So
I don't think that we'll ever see iOS take over as Apple's one operating system.
No, I agree, but I think that most of the tasks that you use or that you do in a desktop operating system will move into like a box in the background, and then you'll have like a touch interface to that box. And
how about the keyboard? Is the keyboard going away?
When they finally
voice,
you know, voice is certainly an interesting thing.
You
but you know,
software
my
in voice?
No, yeah, why not? Why not? Like, you know, tell it to. I want you to do this.
Oh, well, if it did
get it
way,
done.
Yeah,
right. Siri, make me Siri, a
I guess that's,
TV
I know,
app.
I guess that's
I know lots of writers who write using speech to text. I don't know any writers who write using speech to text voluntarily. All of them are because they suffered some sort of crippling hand injury that forced them to switch
but,
to it.
You know,
really? I'm sorry. No, I know somebody who now dictates into his phone because he likes the fact that he can get the notes into Siri, and then he flashes them over to whatever it is that he goes back and edits.
And also, I think you need to look at the young people, right? So you need to look at how kids are using computers, and that's the future, not how we old guys here are using computers now. Yeah. You know, so
I do have a sample group ranging from 13 to 27.
Yeah, they're not using voice either, right?
Not really. I mean, they use it for their phones a lot. As a matter of fact, I have.
But they don't write as much.
I have one member of the sample group who actually, for Christmas, got an Android phone instead of an iPhone, specifically because she texts a lot and she does not want to. She feels an actual tactile keyboard. And I said, you should have called me first because there is actually a Bluetooth sliding keyboard case you could have gotten, or you could have tried to use Siri. But I really think that we need at least one more generational hop before people can think of a computer as something that does not have a keyboard attached to it. It's a good alternative to have voice, but I don't think that the range of things you need to be able to do with a computer can be covered just by voice input anytime soon.
So what I think is that actually written words will decline in, you know, importance. So I think that they're not gonna go away, but I think little kids maybe they learn easier, you know, with an iPad too, with the camera and you know, iMovie and things like iStop Motion for iPad, and I have to bring that in here. They learn actually to express themselves in different ways than just writing text. So I think they might, you know, use more like you know, videos, podcasts, blogging, this kind of thing, with voice and video in the future instead of writing long text. So that's my statement to that.
No, I think things are changing. I think it's pretty clear. I think it may be, in fact, that the future of programming is what you say. It's all super high-level tools that are more conceptual than anything else. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's like,
I'll tell you one thing. You ain't going to see more Thunderbolt. What the heck? Okay. I know. I'm starting to be Mr. Grumpy here. What happened?
I think as I heard a lot of developers say that the engineering is really hard to do on this, and they
did Apple blow it? Should they have gone USB 3?
No, I don't. No. I don't. You know, as so often the case. I mean, Thunderbolt is a really nice technology. It's very fast. It's really it's basically the right way to go. But somehow, for example, there's a reference implementation for the one port, dead end device, and you don't want that. You want a daisy chain device, and there obviously is no. That at least that's what I heard. There's no reference implementation, so people have to figure out themselves how to do that, and that's
somebody in the chat room says, but there are a bunch of Thunderbolt devices in the pipeline. Yes, for the last 2 years they've been in the pipeline. When is that pipeline going to get unclogged? Ken, do you have any insight into this? Is Thunderbolt dead on arrival, or are we still waiting?
I would imagine we're still waiting. I mean,
waiting. Are we going to wait forever? I guess I should have said.
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, weren't there a number of the Ultrabooks announced at CES that are also including Thunderbolt?
Oh, really? That would be good news. Is Thunderbolt on PC, on Windows computers?
Well, I'm asking because I think so, but I didn't cover CES that hard
I should know.
If that does end up being, go ahead. I'm sorry, Andy.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to confirm what you said. There were some outliers who had Thunderbolt ports. I think most of the Windows manufacturers are waiting for better chip level support from Intel and other parts.
Same issue. Yeah.
I've talked to some engineers who work for a couple of those large producers, and they said they definitely are interested in Thunderbolt because it's a tech. They're facing the same problems that Apple was facing. If the move is towards these slimmer, more lightweight devices, unless you want to have like an iPod dock. Ship with each one of these Windows machines to give you a bandolier of ports, Thunderbolt is the best solution for everything they need an Ultrabook to do if they're going to be selling them for $899. So I think that we haven't seen that convergence of four minimum planets lining up in order for Thunderbolt to actually happen. I don't think it's a failure yet, but I think that it's still going to be something that's going to be embraced by most manufacturers, especially ones who have a need for mobility devices.
One thing they may be waiting for is Intel's Ivy Bridge, because that has built-in Thunderbolt support. So that might make a difference. And according to DigiTimes, Acer, Asus, and Lenovo, all three Chinese companies will be offering Thunderbolt by the second quarter. This is according to DigiTimes. So we didn't see them at CES, but those announcements are out there, Ken.
And so then once that happens, you get people buying the high-end stuff, and as more people buy the high-end stuff, the price goes down. And unfortunately, it just takes time because you like the idea that when Apple introduces something, everybody can have it. And I want to say Thunderbolt hit the MacBook Pro a year ago next month or a year ago this month. I can't, February, I believe it was. And so there was this whole idea like, wow, now everything's going to be best and it's going to be really cool. And then some people got it home and they're like, okay, what do I do with this? What do I do with this thing? What happens now?
Apple plays that dangerous game, don't they, where they introduce new technologies and then just wait for the market to catch up. The Aspire S5, which according to SlashGear is the world's thinnest Ultrabook, 15 millimeters, will have a 20 gigabit Thunderbolt port. That actually sounds pretty good. It's too bad you can't connect it to anything except a monitor. I'd love to have a hard drive. But I think Ivy Bridge is what we're waiting for. So maybe that's when Wintel, I should say, will go. We'll come into the Thunderbolt world, and we'll maybe see some more hard drives. Let's take a break and come back with more. We've got a great panel here. Mac OS Ken Ray is here from his home in bitterly cold Buffalo. Is it Buffalo or Buffalo?
It's Buffalo, but it's also not bitterly cold. It was snowing to beat the band yesterday, and now it's like 48 or something.
I can't understand. It's all melting. I can't understand. Yeah. I'm going to be in New York tomorrow. Do you think I'll have snow?
Oh. No, it's going. It's what is it like? I think it's 56 in New York City.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's. I think I can officially say it is creepily warm in New England this winter.
We call it earthquake weather here in California.
I've never really thought about stockpiling guns and water and stuff like that. But maybe in the next 7 or 8 years, I'm going to need to be able to be self sufficient.
Weatherman's calling for 58 degrees tomorrow in New York City. That's ridiculous.
Just a bit.
The mayor should do something about that.
Mayor should fix that. We need snow. Andy Yannacco is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times, but he lives in the New England area. So he understands all of this. Oliver is from, are you from Bavaria?
Yes,
Oliver
Munich, Reinbeck, Bavaria,
You from Munich?
Yes.
Yeah. So is it cold there right
now? Yes.
Yeah.
A lot.
You're happy
right
to
now
be
it's
here.
Like minus 20 Celsius. So
that's really cold.
I think. Yeah, Europe's actually having all the cold weather that we don't have. There's actually kind of a crisis going on there.
Is
a number of people.
Is that cold enough for beer to freeze?
Yes, absolutely.
Terrible. This could be a huge crisis. Holy moly. 20 below?
Yes.
Minus 20 Celsius?
Yes.
Holy cow. That's really cold.
They're like, I mean, it's like one of those, we all went to Macworld, or at least for me, we all went to Macworld. I totally forgot that there was like a primary race going on.
I didn't check
any other kind of world news, and I come back and they're like, yeah, people are kind of,
the beer is freezing in Munich.
Yeah.
Also from Smile Software, Gene McDonald is here. And, you know, I have to say, and I, Gene is a sponsor as well, and we have a Smile ad coming up a little later on. So what I'm going to ask you to do, we're going to get a hood for her to put over her. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm going to ask you to demo it if you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we do.
That's what we do?
Yeah.
I'll
demo it.
Yeah, and I'll give you your money back because it's a conflict of interest in a little bit. But I wanted Gene and Oliver to be here because they are developers who are, you know, smack dab in this Macworld question and development for iOS versus OS X. And I guess you don't really care about Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt cameras would be kind of cool.
Can Thunderbolt freeze?
Never. Never. Tell you what, let's talk about Ford right now. And Ford is, of course, another great sponsor. We have some really wonderful sponsors. We handpick them. You know, we don't let just anybody buy ads on this show. Ford is well known, of course, for their in-car voice-activated sync. And now they've added something really cool. I think Ford's getting into the mobile phone space as well. They've got AppLink. Which means that there's an API for smartphone developers to write their apps in such a way that it can interface with the car and you can talk to the phone through the Ford Sync. Now, I've told you about Ford Sync before. You know, your hands are on the wheel, your eyes are on the road. You press a button. It goes, hello, what would you like? And then you say, well, I want my Pandora station. And it plays Pandora. I want play that Wayne Newton station that I made. All right, we'll play that. I don't like it, but we'll play it. It doesn't talk back to you. You could say thumbs up to a song, thumbs down to a song, just as you would on your smartphone. It's not just Pandora, by the way. It's Stitcher, Slacker, OpenBeak will read your tweets. All of this without looking down, without twiddling knobs. You're still paying attention to driving, and that's absolutely the key of Ford Sync. They also announced some new apps at CES. I'm trying to remember. Some really cool stuff. I love what's happening here, which is an interface from your smartphone, by the way, not just iPhone, but Android and Windows Phone as well, to your car. I want you to give it a try. Now, Sync is not available, as options on some cars, as standard equipment on others. AppLink is not available in all cars, but it is in the 2012 Ford Fiesta. I think there's three different models that you can try AppLink in. So go to your Ford dealer, say, I want to drive the 2012 Ford Fiesta, and I want to try this AppLink. And they will show you. Every Ford dealer has a sync specialist who can show you exactly how it works. Or visit the website, ford.com/technology. Highly recommend you take a look at the latest Ford vehicles. They're very exciting. They got the 2012 Focus. You can get on that. The electric Focus waiting list is out now. And next year, some really cool plug-in hybrids and hybrid diesel and all that stuff. I love it. I just love it. There it is right there, ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support. So the New York Times concluded its series of articles about Apple's suppliers this week. I think Sunday was the last one. Apple's response, the Times report is patently false and offensive. Tim Cook says, we care about every worker in our supply chain. Did you all read the New York Times series? I think it was two or three articles.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Andy?
I thought it made a lot of really important points. It really outlines a lot of the human cost of producing consumer electronics, but I don't think it really nailed down the source of the problem yet. because a lot of companies have, excuse me, a lot of, a few watchdogs have come to Apple's defense over specifically this article, not about their labor practices in general, but specifically this article, saying that they think that they relied on a lot of testimony that wasn't really spot on regarding Apple's intentions, because the biggest slam that the articles, especially the last one, was making was that Apple can be doing so much more, but they don't really care enough to. That they have enough control over Foxconn that if they wanted to actually pay for better worker treatment and pay for better inspections, that they could. They were interviewing a lot of former former Apple executives under anonymity, talking about how Apple will always just completely keep their profit margins of for their suppliers absolutely as slim as possible, and always be coming back and asking for bids that were lower than last year's bid, and the article suggesting, of course, that the natural effect of this is for these companies to cut corners wherever they can. And given that their costs of supplies and machinery is going to remain pretty much fixed, the only place where they can cut costs in order to get their operational expenses down is going to be in the cost of supporting their labor. They did get some support. Apple got some support from a couple of different trade groups. But I think they did leave the biggest issue on the table. Apple has an immense amount of control over Foxconn. They could, if they were to elevate, I don't believe that they don't care. I believe that it's a company with lots of different priorities in their manufacturing, and that if you were to say, what is the priority of treatment of labor, it would not be number one on the list. I don't know where it would be on that list, but I think that all of these reports from so many different sources becoming so very public means that whoever's in charge of maintaining that list should put labor up another tick or two or three.
Ken, with Apple having almost $100 billion in the bank, do you think it would behoove them maybe to focus a little less on profits, a little more on the conditions for its workers?
Wow, that's such a hard question. I mean, okay, I had a discussion with some people at Macworld about, first of all, the fact that Apple is sitting on close to $100 billion,
$97.6 billion.
That's a little crazy.
Jeez, Louise.
One hopes though that there's a target that they're going for. I mean, one hopes they're not just looking to, like, you know, take all of the money and, you know, put it in a mattress and stick some of it in their ears and, you know, stick their tongue out at people. So one hopes that there's, like, a target that they are going for. I want to, what Andy said about Apple could pay Foxconn to pay its employees better. There was an article, I can't remember, but I actually did like 6 or 7 minutes just on this story on today's macOS Ken. And if you listen to macOS Ken, you know, most stories get about a minute, minute and a half, but there are so many different facets to this one. I'm not sure how I feel about, first of all, how the New York Times handled part of the reaction of it, because there are a lot of people in China saying Apple's better than a lot of other people.
Right.
And saying that Apple's better than a lot of other people is not an excuse. I mean, you can't say, well, I only beat my people 5 times. Guy down the street beats his people 10. I mean, that's still not okay. Right. And I think that's something that Tim Cook sort of acknowledges. At the same time, there is a guy, and unfortunately I don't have the piece of paper in front of me, but he is a labor rights activist who says, okay, so let's say Apple does pay Foxconn to go ahead and start, you know, treating its workers better. Apple is so dependent on Foxconn at this point, and Foxconn is not stupid. Apple could pay them that money, and Foxconn could say, okay, we'll get right on that. And then they could stick the money in their ears and stick their tongue out at everybody.
Right.
I mean, just because Apple tells Foxconn to do something doesn't necessarily mean they will. And Foxconn kind of has Apple over a barrel at this point, because they're making iPads in Brazil. They're going too soon. They're making iPhones in Brazil. They're making so much of the stuff that Apple makes in China. So how do you solve that problem? Honestly, the biggest, and this is the hardest, most difficult thing to acknowledge, the best illustration of the problem came from fake Steve Jobs 2 years ago. He's like, yeah, we're the problem, okay? Walmart does not become the largest retailer in the world
right,
without China.
Right.
And China does not send us beds that you can get for $50 right, or, you know, whatever it is, without us sitting here going, well, I'm not going to pay $75 for a bed. I'll pay $50. Get on that. I mean, you can say it's Tim Cook. You can say it's Sam Walton, or whoever inherited Sam Walton. Well, we're part of it.
I think it's all of us. If we're not, I'll have to say something else, which is that I was just looking at, you know, New York Times has a list of its most viewed, most emailed, and most blogged articles. And in no case do any of these articles appear in the top 10. So I don't think people even care that much about this. Wow. I mean, that's really a statement, too. I mean, here are these articles, whether you think they were a hit piece, whether you think Apple's doing what it can or isn't doing enough, nobody really is listening.
It didn't feel to me like a hit piece. It did feel like sort of the, what is it that Andy says, treeware? It felt like the treeware version of link bait. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It felt like this was, like, there was one article, I can't remember which one.
It didn't
one,
work. Said, if it was link bait, it was a flop.
There was one article that said that the New York Times is going for the Pulitzer, and that may actually be the case.
Yeah.
There's one other question, and I'm not saying, I mean, the thing is, I don't want to fault them for doing this because these are real issues, just like Andy said, that really do need to be addressed. They didn't seem to pay as much credence to the response coming out of China saying,
we're happy.
You're just vilifying Apple, and this is a bigger issue than that.
It is.
That didn't seem to get as much play as the, here's how much Apple sucks and here's why.
I think it's a complicated story. And I, you know, Nicholas Kristof also writing in the New York Times said, hey, there's a lot of people in the world who'd be thrilled to have a low-paying industrial job.
Somebody ran a story. They're opening up their plant in Foxconn in northern China. Excuse me. Which, I mean, that honestly is a scarier story to me. I mean, the factories down in Shenzhen are coastal and they're close to Hong Kong. And they're a bit more easily accessible to outside media.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's not easy, but they're easier than the one they're putting sort of in the middle of northern China. Yeah, you're going
to
get
there. I just got an invitation to go to Shenzhen by...
Did you really?
Yeah.
Are you going to?
I probably should.
Who did the invitation from?
Well, I'm sure it's from the manufacturers. It's some group called, I think, PCH. They've been taking journalists to Shenzhen to talk to people. The PCH International, it's a Hong Kong-based something, probably public relations firm, right?
Yeah, the tough part about that, though, is, I mean, obviously they know you're coming. I mean, this is what some people said was...
They're a supply chain company. So,
but I mean, if they're inviting you, then they're obviously cleaning stuff up. I mean,
yes.
If they're inviting you and me and the New York Times and whoever.
That's,
I mean, if
exactly
they're inviting
the
people
issue
over to see
me,
how good they're doing.
I would love to go. I'm not an investigative reporter. I feel like I'd just be a patsy. Right?
Yeah.
Say, here, look how lovely it is. It's all clean and wonderful. And yes,
and
that's workers
home
to
and
talk
like,
to.
Everybody's got water beds.
Yeah.
Probably not. Just yeah. The people.
There are 98 people sleeping in that water bed, but hey, it's a water bed. Right. Try to agree on the sleep comfort number for that adjustable bed, but I think that this has really become like it's become high profile enough, and there is enough people from enough independent sources that are complaining about working conditions that at these Foxconn plants for assembly lines for these specific devices that it is becoming a problem that Apple needs to seriously address. It is by all. The people who have tried to teach me about these issues, Apple does make sure that its workers are treated better than most people who assemble things in China. They also have a better open policy. The question is how much force do they put behind those policies? If Foxconn were to break rule, there are different levels of. Different demands that Apple makes of their suppliers, and the top level are these core things like worker health and safety. If a plant violates one of these core problems, is shutting down the contract with this plant on the table for this company? And looks from the biggest area of concern, I thought, from the New York Times articles is that the writers were insisting that Apple will take it only so far, but not beyond a certain point, especially if it's a plant that can only manufacture the only plant that can really manufacture a certain part for them. So I think that Apple's treating employees, make sure that people who work in assembly plants are working better, are being better treated than other people. But I don't care about how other companies, how well they're treated according to other people. I think that if Apple really wanted to put the screws down, not simply by saying here's a larger check for manufacturing, but we are going to make congratulations, Foxconn. We're going to work together. We're going to make you together. You're going to be the pride of Asian manufacturing. We're going to make sure that it's so good you can have people in at any time to inspect what's going on, and they'll say, my God, wouldn't the greatest thing in the world be to be a worker in this plant? And they could do that by putting more boots on the ground to have insert themselves into the inspection process and to have a closer eye on things. At minimum, they can't just simply say that we've been maligned, we've been maimed, we've been hurt, we've been offended. Maybe they have done so, but it does require them to participate in this story now by doing a little bit more than it was a big step that they were releasing a list of all their contractors. That was one of the big complaints that a lot of watchdog groups were having, that they're so secretive about who manufactures what in their product line that they weren't allowing it. So they didn't know, the watchdogs didn't even know what companies they should keep an eye on to see how well these workers were being treated. That is a huge step, and they should get full credit for that. But I really do think that Apple needs to participate at least in this public discussion.
I agree. And I think now they will have to because of the times. And so the final word is, this is a good thing that these articles were written, and the conversation needs to be had, yep, however much it bores everybody, apparently.
Let me ask one other question really fast. So does Apple do that for the Apple line, or does Apple do that for Foxconn? Because the thing that seems to, I mean, there was a little bit of a thing in the New York Times about, you know, Foxconn also builds stuff for
everybody.
Dell and HP. And,
everybody.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, does this need to be actually sort of a hands across America thing, or a hands across the tech world thing, where you get Michael Dell and Tim Cook together?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
where
is Michael Dell in this? Exactly. Yeah.
You get everybody together and say, we're all doing this. Because if Apple says we're going to clean up our supply chain, so great. Building 6 in Foxconn City is like totally great place to work, but buildings 5 and 7, you don't want to send your worst enemy there. Because it's not, this is where it gets so thorny. It's not Apple's job to clean up everything. It's everybody's job to clean up everything.
It's their job to clean up things that they're immediately responsible for. If they've told their subcontractors that here is a 48-point a list of things you agree to do in terms of treating the environment in which your employees are going to work in, it's their responsibility to make sure that they meet all 41 of those criteria. And it's very, very true that there are some companies that are a little bit better than Apple in certain regards. Some are much worse than Apple in some regards. That's not Apple's problem, but Apple's Apple's manufacturing partners are their problem, and they really do have to participate in the discussion, do whatever they can to improve things. And even if they have to ultimately say, we are doing everything we possibly can and we are looking to improve, at least they have to show some more skin in the game than they're showing right now. I mean, one of the most interesting things from the entire debate, and this was something that was echoed from, again, the people who are helping me to be a little bit less ignorant about the dimension of this problem, because I agree with you, Ken, it's not a simple problem with a simple solution. What they like to see in large manufacturers is a certain amount of welcoming of third-party watchdog groups, because it's not that they're sneaking people into the plants and trying to video things and trying to get stories in the papers, but they are the sort of people that can feed information to Apple about, here's something you really want to take a look into. We are doing this work for you. We're not here to tell you to tell the world that you're a bunch of evil bastards, but we're giving this information to you in the hopes that you will do something about it.
And at the same time, it's sort of fair to go ahead and beat up on Apple, because, I mean, Dell's not worth more than Exxon on any given day.
Good point.
You know? Gateway or whoever else is not worth more than that. So, it makes sense to point fingers at them. It's certainly not going to be bad for your circulation, although apparently it's not going to be great for your circulation, as Leo pointed out. It's not going to be bad for your circulation to do that, and it's certainly not going to be bad for the industry to do that. At the same time, it kind of feels to me like, and maybe it would just be more of a message, even if Apple ends up bearing the brunt of it. And that would also, I mean, what did Tim Cook say in the letter that was supposedly sent to all of his employees? The one thing we're not going to do, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember it off the top of my head, the one thing we're not going to do is stand by and do nothing. That's not what leaders do.
Good.
So,
and as Virgil
but,
said in the chat room, Apple should lead by example, whether it's their problem in its entirety or not.
Here's one of the things that really stuck out to me over the past couple months looking at this, that it seemed as though there was a point in the big Apple rollout keynotes where there would be a whole section of this new product rollout where they would go through all of the green factors that went into the assembling and design of this thing, where it's designed from the ground up to use minimal packaging, to use recyclable materials, to eliminate use of toxic chemicals and waste products in its production. there really should be. Why isn't it that we're not seeing that same sort of attention paid? And here is the improvements that have been. Here is what's been. How workers are being treated in the plants in which this product is being manufactured. We want to be just as prideful and just as boastful of how our subcontractors treat our employees as we are of the fact that we don't use caustic chemical cleaning agents to wipe down the screens of our devices.
Mm-hmm. We're going to come back and talk about. We kind of peripherally mentioned it, but we, you know, it's funny. They did it to us again. Apple releases their quarterly earnings, huge news, right after the show last week. So we will talk about that next. Andy Yannakos here, OS Ken, Mac OS Ken Ray, G. McDonald from Smile Software, and Oliver Breidenbach from Boinks talking about the Mac. Alex is out of town. He's in D.C. or something. He actually missed Macworld Expo. Will he be back next week? Only the shadow knows. It's really a mystery. He's been traveling a lot lately, that guy. Hey, let's talk about Smile Software. Gene, do you have a PDF pen on your iPad there? What?
I sure
no,
do.
Of course not.
I think
why
I
would I have that, she says. Do you have the release version or you have a special?
No, I have the release version.
Beta version.
No. It's
so congratulations. This is new.
Thank you.
We've talked before about PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro on the Macintosh. Which, of course, it's a PDF reader, editor, annotator, really great tool. What is new or different on the iPad?
Well, it's on the iPad. That's the
that's
number
the
one thing.
It's $10 too.
It's $10. That's the introductory price, and it does. I think the story is that it does everything for that. Almost everything that you do on the Mac, you can do on the iPad now with the PDF Pen for iPad. So.
Now, you'll find it on the iTunes store, but if you want to know more, you can also go to the website, smilesoftware.com/MacBreak.
That's right.
And read about it. Go ahead, give us a little.
Sure.
As long as you're here, give us a little demo. There
as
you
long
go.
As I'm here, yeah.
So those are all PDFs?
These are PDFs. This is the document screen. You can grab your PDFs from Dropbox or Evernote, Google Docs. It's also, I guess the big news that I should have set up at the top of the thing is that it's got iCloud support.
Oh, that's awesome.
So all these docs that are here on my iPad, or if I open up my Mac, they'll be right there as well. And we just released PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro with iPads.
So
iCloud
support. If I email you a PDF and you open it into PDF Pen, does it then automatically just go to my iCloud as well?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
wow.
If you've got iCloud support, you know,
turned
enabled.
On. You have to turn it on, of course.
You do. And we're for sure the first PDF editing application to have the Mac iPad, you know, seamlessly edit from one to the other thing worked out.
That's really cool.
There's not that many apps with iCloud, but that's obviously another discussion, you know.
And of course you support Dropbox and Evernote and Google Docs and all the traditional things, but that's great to have iCloud support, because especially automatic. So now I can open it on PDF Pen on my Mac.
Exactly.
Right from iCloud.
Exactly.
So I don't have to sync. I don't have to do all that silly stuff to copy the PDF over.
No, that's right. That's right.
That's
so, and then of course, you know, yeah, anything you open a PDF on Safari or in your mail, you can, you know, just hold it and say open in PDF Pen. Instead of, say, open an iBooks or whatever.
So let me tell you what I use PDF Pen on the Mac for, and you could tell me if you support this. It's almost exclusively signing documents, because people still want me to sign stuff. And I have, I shouldn't say this, I have my, in the library of PDF Pen, I have my signature, and it's like, it's great. I just rubber stamp it, yes, and I send it off. Can I do that on the iPad?
You sure can.
I love it.
And it works the same way.
Tough question. Will my library sync via iCloud?
Not yet.
You got to do that.
Yeah,
because then I wouldn't have to even get my signature. I'll get my signature.
Well, just like on PDF
Pen. Actually, I can sign it on the iPad.
That's right.
That's
you could
easier.
Just grab, you know, the thing
just
and just
it.
Sign.
That's even
like
better.
That.
That's probably more legal. Look at that.
I am not a lawyer. But actually, you know, that's the same deal with creating your library, so you really will only have to do it once. So I have my signature. Obviously, this is my signature. I've been demoing at Macworld all week.
Lisa Newman's signature.
Lisa Newton.
Newton. I get it.
You get it. Thank you. You're the first person.
Slow. Oh, that Lisa Newton.
Yeah. So same thing that you would do on PDF Pen on the Mac, you can actually make the signature transparent. You resize it. And
then people will never know that you faked it.
Right.
Because it overlaps. It's like, right, I must have signed that.
And then you can go back to the library to custom and add it. So now it's in there. Just
that was easy.
Like you on the Mac.
Yeah.
You know, so for the next time you can grab it.
It's like a rubber stamp.
Uh-huh. The other thing that's really cool about, I was just so impressed, I have to say, with the engineers that I work with. I kept thinking, oh, well, they won't be able to do X, whatever, on the iPad, because that'll be hard, not being a programmer myself. But things like selecting some text and then, even after 4 days at Macworld, I still haven't, totally gotten the touchpad, demoing. It doesn't, work in my fingers as well as a keyboard yet. But I can select text and then hold down my finger to get the menu to pop up and choose correct text. And that does what it does on the Mac, which is create editable text box. So say you're on the road you have to change the name of something, Mobile Me. I think they should probably change that to iCloud. And then you can make changes, or a price is wrong, or date,
that's
or something
PDF,
like
that. Which normally you can't do that with. That's really
well.
Great.
You could do it on the Mac with PDF Pen. So it's pretty neat for that kind of stuff.
$10, you can get it. In fact, I hear you're already top 10. You've immediately gone on the charts in the App Store, haven't you?
Yes, we immediately went on the charts, and we sure appreciate everybody supporting the app, but. In my mind, we're number one, because the top three are Pages, Keynote, and Numbers.
You might as well just take those out.
If we're number four, that's really one, right? Everybody's agreed.
So. You're the number one non-Apple app.
Yeah. All the developers wish Apple would just make their own category. So Lion could be in there, and the iWork apps could be in there, and they could stop pushing us all down the charts. But that's
so there's
not
no.
Happen.
It's just PDF Pen for iPad. There's no Pro version. This is it's everything.
Right.
$10. You can get it right now, or find out more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. $10 is a great price for that too. Very, very cool. Thank you, Gene. I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I could show you.
I didn't have to fire up my own iPad. let you show the world.
Thanks.
So Apple had a very, very good quarter. How good? Ken, is it the best quarter any company's ever had in the history of the world good?
I wouldn't know that. I think it's kind of funny though that in the earnings call, Tim Cook was like, "Yeah, it was a good quarter.
It's okay.
We kind of underestimated the whole iPhone thing. If we had bet harder on that, then we would have done much better."
Somebody pointed out there were more iPhones sold per second than there were babies born in the world per second. So this is good. Yeah, this is bad news in the long run, because pretty soon they could saturate.
As I said, every baby gets an iPhone.
Everybody.
The stat that really stuck out to me is that Apple sold more iPhones that quarter than Hostess sold Twinkies in all 2011.
Wow.
36 million versus 37 million.
37 million iPhones, 128% growth. I guess the iPhone 4S, you really can say, is just a failure, just a flop.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Didn't change any. Got the tiny little screen. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants. It just shows you that how wrong we can get it sometimes. The tech press can get it sometimes, because we thought, oh, it's just an incremental upgrade. It's only, what do you get? A little bit better camera. You get Siri, dual core processor. And obviously, it may not be because it's the 4S. It may just be that the iPhone is getting more and more of a juggernaut, but boy,
I'm trying to figure that out. It's not like the iPhone is new. It's not like smartphone adoption is new. And there are all the things that you said last time I was on here, actually, about people want bigger screens, people want 4G, and now people want iPhone.
Did you have to bring that up?
Well, no, but the thing is, the numbers were still so stunning. I mean, I was surprised by them. I mean, I know. Gene Munster said recently that it's something like 94% of people who have an iPhone expect that their next iPhone is going to be an iPhone. Now, that's based on probably a survey that he ran, which is going to be relatively small, because he's not Ipsos. He's not, he's Gene Munster, and so he's got his crew. But
I'm sure it's accurate.
I think that's
accurate.
Well, I think it probably is. I expected that a lot of what you're going to see now is just people upgrading, and it's not just people upgrading. And it's not people walking in Well, hang on. It may actually be people walking in just getting the free phone now, because on AT&T, they have the three iPhone 3GS and they have the $99 iPhone 4.
They didn't break this down to models, did they? This is just all iPhones. So it could be 3GS, 4, or 4S.
And you got to figure that a lot of people took advantage of either the free or the less expensive iPhone on AT&T, because 7.6 million, I think their numbers came out last night, 7.6 million of the 9.4 million smartphones that they sold were iPhones. They didn't say whether they're iPhone 4S or iPhone 4 or 3GS, but
that's 80%.
Kind of crazy, right? And so you think...
I have to point out, AT&T not only sells Android phones, but also they're the big vendor for Windows Phone 7 in the U.S. 80% iPhone is a big deal at AT&T. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's with competition from Verizon and Sprint.
And yet at the same time, you had Tim Cook saying on the conference call, we bet really hard on the iPhone 4S, but it turns out we could have bet harder. And sort of like, oh, yeah, you're right. The best quarter ever.
What could they do to bet harder? Make more, I guess.
I guess. Wake up to people at Foxconn.
They should hire every single person in China. earnings, not so bad. $46.33 billion in sales. Now, to make that, so you go year to year, right? You don't go previous quarter. You go this quarter last year. Right. $46 billion compared to $26
billion. Right.
Huge growth.
So people bought stuff last year, but yeah. Christmas to Christmas, right? Not quarter to quarter.
And profit, $13 billion more. Their profit margins went up. More than double the profit for this time last year. $13 billion in profit. it's just mind-boggling. There's no question about a well-run company. I think you could point to Tim Cook, really, for a lot of these numbers. He could take a victory lap here because... as operations guy, he's the guy who brought the profit margins up, right? Who made sure that there were 37 million iPhones to sell in three months.
At the same time, you've got to point to Forrestal and his crew, right? Because you're right. You're holding basically the same phone that you were holding this time last year. I mean, yes, it's got a faster processor. Yes, it's got a little bit a better camera. But the big difference between the two phones is iOS 4 and iOS 5, right?
Right.
And then Siri.
So you're giving credit to the software guy, Scott Forstall.
No, I'm giving credit to all of them. Yes, Tim Cook is a master of operations. And he was still sort of doing both of those things into that quarter. But at the same time, you've got, what Forstall has done. And then, there's the whole iCloud crew as well.
It's a team.
It's crazy. It's said over and over again, but they're really firing on all cylinders. And then they borrow other people's cylinders and they fire on those too.
Some of the iPhone sales cannibalized iPod sales, but I think this was all expected. iPods went down from 19.45 million to 15 point.
Yeah, but they still beat expectations. I think the street was expecting 13 million. So, even though they lost.
It ain't shabby. 15 million is 5 million a month. 1.25 million a week. It ain't shabby.
That's something that was out for 10 years in that quarter, right?
Yeah.
It was a 10th anniversary. Now, granted, a lot of those are the iPod Touch and the Nano and things that we didn't have when they first came out. But yeah, it's a 10-year-old device and it still dominates MP3 players. It's just that MP3 players don't dominate anymore because now people are starting to finally get hip to the fact that they can play music on their phone.
It's certainly telling that the highest selling iPod is still the iPod Touch. So that's more of a victory for iOS than for the iPod.
Right. and speaking of iPads, more than double the sales year to year, 15.43 million iPads. Now I get it. It's a profit thing. 15.43 million iPads compared to 7.33 last year. Do you actually make that calculation, Gene, where you go, well, we know how many are out there. We figure we could sell this percent. This is a big market.
Yeah.
You have to.
Absolutely. Apple does so well, we have to keep, up with them.
Right.
They keep giving us more potential customers. But I did talk to one of our competitors at the show, on the iPad, and he said, there's more than enough customers for all of us.
I think so.
I think so, too.
And you guys don't make any PC software. You're an Apple
right.
shop.
We're always Apple. Always have been.
Oliver, you do some PC stuff.
No.
Always
also,
Mac.
Just Mac. Yes.
So these are you both all in on the Mac platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And I think rightly so. Wow. In fact, bad news. The Macs only saw a 26% increase, so I guess they're not dead yet. 5.2 million Macintoshes sold in the first quarter.
Let's keep talking them dead. Maybe they have like a
it's a
same story as with Apple 20 years
they're
ago.
Dead.
They're dead.
It's so from 4.13 to 5.2 million Macs. Now,
also
go ahead.
Also, Tim Cook was asked in the Q&A, I think, about cannibalization of Mac sales via iPad. And so he did acknowledge that they were seeing some cannibalization of Mac, but not nearly as much as the iPad was cannibalizing sales of Windows machines. So all in all, they're very happy about that.
Did you just go?
Whoa.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time in high school practicing that. You know that. And now let's talk about laptops, which includes the Air and the MacBook Pros. They were the majority of Macs. Out of 5.2 million Macs sold, 3.71 were laptops. 1.48 million desktops. So they're still selling a good number of desktops, but I got to think the Air makes up the majority. We're still waiting. No news yet of a 15-inch MacBook Air. But I think they got to do that, right?
Yeah, that's they love that form factor too much. They love the
SSD. Everybody loves it. It's gorgeous, you know.
We did a photo shoot recently, you know, for some photos of people using our products. I said we can only have Airs in the picture.
Really?
Everything else.
Otherwise, it'll look old.
It will look old sooner if we don't use Airs.
That's a very good point. In fact, in movies too, I was watching Mission Impossible, and lots of Airs.
Oh, really? I haven't seen it yet.
It was interesting. Lots of iPhones, but the big screenshot was of a Samsung Android phone. I don't care about the movie. I'm looking at product placement. Very successful quarter. Jeez.
Did you see the quote about Apple TV sales though?
How were those Apple TV sales? Did they say it's a hobby?
I thought
1.4 million.
Cook was still calling it a hobby, but the interesting thing is that he said that they sold about 2.8 million units all of last year, and in the last quarter, they sold 1.4 million.
That's a lot.
So
he said the Apple TV product is doing actually pretty well.
Yeah,
they sound surprised. Actually, you know what? It's doing pretty well. If in the scheme of things, he says, if you dollarize revenues, it's the kind of thing CEOs say. If you dollarize revenues, we still classify this as a hobby. However, read between the lines, kids. We want to continue to add things to it. And if you're using the latest one, I don't know about you, but I couldn't live without it. So he's not saying look ahead to the next version. He's saying we're not done with this version.
It's also interesting that he was referring to iCloud not as a product but as a strategy. So I think that pretty much identifies what they... Where they put it in the big pyramid of technology that they're building.
85 million people have signed up for iCloud.
Strategy for the next decade, which is kind of interesting. It gets you out of that mindset with Mobile Me of this was a failure.
It also gets you out of Tim. How come iCloud won't sync my playlist correctly?
Well,
it's a strategy.
Give us another
five years.
Exactly.
Well, I took a long look at the Apple site on iCloud, just reading about. I was trying to understand if they say in iCloud or on iCloud, or you know, just for an English copyright.
What do they say?
They say in iCloud. I was saying on because they say on the App Store.
Does it float on the cloud or is it in the cloud?
But the most interesting thing is they only say that once or twice. Mostly, they have iCloud as a noun with active verbs. So iCloud manages this, and iCloud transfers that. And I thought that was
That's very Apple-y. Remember, they didn't ever say the Macintosh. It was always Macintosh.
Right.
Like,
right.
Mr. Macintosh.
iPad does this. Oh, iPhone does this.
Yeah.
iPhone.
It wasn't you do this with your
iCloud.
Blah. Yeah. So that was interesting.
It's a little bit like analyzing a speech by Kim Jong-il now.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Somebody asked him if iOS versus Android was like Mac versus Windows. He said, I wouldn't classify it that way. Mac has outgrown the market for 20 quarters in a row, but it still has single-digit percentages of worldwide market share. But if you look at iOS, we've sold 315 million devices, and 62 million of them were in the last quarter alone. he says, I don't have comparable numbers of Android. I haven't found a way to get a very crisp quarterly reporting that we do that's straightforward and transparent, a little shot to the Android marketplace, to Google, I guess. But they can't be unhappy. And I don't think you should really look at it as a horse race, and I can see why they wouldn't want to. They're saying, look, we're successful. He does say it's a very close race in the iPhone. On the iPad side, we're way out ahead.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a two-horse race. There's a horse in Redmond. I love this. He's talking about Microsoft. That always suits up and always runs. Tim showing his Auburn
mixed
roots here.
Metaphor, I think.
I don't think horses suit up and run, but okay.
Yeah.
And we'll keep running.
Yep.
And there's other players we can never count out. So what we focus on is innovating and making the world's best products, and we'll just keep on doing that and somehow ignore how many horses there are. We just want to stay ahead and be the lead one.
Yeah. He also was talking about, he was asked about the entrance of Amazon into the tablet market, and he was saying that he didn't feel as though the Kindle Fire had affected iPad sales at all. For going on further to say that he felt as though consumers were seeing these as two very separate devices.
Yeah.
Although I did actually, when I was reading the Q&A, I did have to like highlight the phrase "innovate like crazy," which is, I think, Tim Cook's own insanely great. So that's going to be the bingo card.
So how much money is $100 billion? MBA Online has a graphic. Let me pull it up for you. That just shows, well, you could embed this on your site, how much cash they have. Apple's got it now worth over $400 billion. It's the most valuable public company in the world. If there were $400 billion bills laid flat, that would cover 42% of the United States.
I think they should totally do that.
That's something to do with the money.
I think they should split it up.
Actually really telling. If you took all of Apple's employees and gave them what Apple's worth, each would get $6.6 million. That shows you how valuable each and every employee is at Apple. That's incredible. Incredible. Apple has $97 billion in cash reserves. Now, this is interesting. Two-thirds of that reserve is stored offshore. The corporate tax on $97.7 billion is enough to buy an iPad for every person in Canada and Greece. I don't know where they get these. Somebody spends a lot of time doing this. In the last 3 months, Apple...
Portugal can go screw itself.
Yeah. No, not Portugal, just Canada and Greece. In the last 3 months, Apple brought in four times more profit than Walmart.
Interesting.
While spending, and this is, I think, and Jean-Louis Gasset has pointed this out, they're very efficient while spending three times less on operations. That's how good the profit margin is. Four times the money while spending one-third as much. And if Apple were to decide to be public-spirited, they could pay off the debt of eight countries within the EU, Slovakia, Luxembourg, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Latvia, Cyprus, Estonia, and Malta. Again, what do you got against Portugal?
Greece.
Or Greece. Greece, you know what?
Greece's
debt's kind of high. Yeah.
can't afford that.
So great. That's from MBAOnline.com. I love that infographic. That's how good it was for Apple in the last quarter. And I see no reason to think it's going to slow down. Anybody think this is just this? I mean, every year, every quarter, bing, 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 bing. Is it going to slow down? When's it going to slow down?
Not this year. Next year could be interesting, though. Now that Intel comes out with new processors, now that the tablet market could be new competition in the tablet market, and not for 2012, but 2013. When I say slow down, I don't mean Apple is suddenly breaking even. I mean that they won't always break the record for profitability for every quarter that they do. Inevitably, you're going to see the curve start to flatten out. And when that happens, all kinds of analysts are going to say, oh, sell. They only made $73 billion. Oh, for God's sakes, the sky's falling.
Except hopefully somebody will remember what Munster said about 94% of people who have iPhones today plan to make their next iPhone an iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole other part of this is the ecosystem that, you know, we talk about from time to time. I mean, Windows is going to come on with you know, their tablets, and that's going to be interesting, probably a lot to the enterprise and maybe to people who have never had a tablet before. But, you know, people who have the first iPad are going to get iPad 3 because they've also got the iPhone. Or, I mean, if they didn't go iPad 1, iPad 2, iPad 3, I mean, they're mostly locked in, right? because of iTunes, because of the apps. I mean, because of all the stuff they've got on their iPhones. Yeah. So
I think it really, a lot of us, we have to just guess because we haven't seen what Microsoft's real plan is for Windows 8. Last week, I think, was the first piece of news that said that Microsoft had actually succeeded in building a version of Windows 8 that could run classic Windows apps on the AMD processor. So that is an indication that you could have a low power CPU on a Windows tablet that could run the full edition of Microsoft Office and pretty much anything else that that you work with on a day to day basis. So I think that's why I think that 2013 could be very interesting if Windows manufacturers can ship a really, really good Windows 8 tablet that uses the Metro interface when you want a real mobile type experience, but still can be taken home and docked to your desktop and be used as your regular desktop machine in a multi-windowed, real heavy productivity sort of work mode. And this thing costs somewhere within the range of an iPad. And remember that an iPad costs as little as $499, but it can cost as much as nearly $900 by the time all is said and done. That could be interesting. I don't know how that will disrupt iPad sales, or if it will, but it's something that I think we should all be thinking about and paying attention to.
That whole thing makes me sad, though.
What?
That idea just makes me sad. If you're going to take the form factor and the fun and the future of a tablet and what it can be and turn it into your Windows desktop, that just bums me out.
Andy, you may can cry.
Right. Yeah. How is that? I'm serious. How is that different from having an iMac? Imagine that if you had an 11-inch iMac, okay, mm-hmm. Remember that Apple used to make those, the original like goose arm, yes. Table lamp iMac. Yep. Now imagine that you have a device exactly like that, but when you get home, you don't necessarily want to carry a trackpad and a keyboard with you, but it will actually work that way once you get it home. Or when you're traveling, one of the things that really kind of kills me and gives me a hint that maybe there is some room for greater perfection in iOS and how the tablets work is that it is still the exception to the rule that I can travel with just the iPad. Usually I'm traveling with my MacBook and my iPad. And I put this out to debate for a bunch of people on Twitter over the weekend. And people were saying, well, no, just get a MacBook Air, an 11-inch Air. And I love the 11-inch Air, but still, why should I have to bring two computers with me? Why can't I have... That's why I'm really interested in the Windows 8 tablets. I have the developer tablet upstairs. I've been using it for the past month or so. It really is quite cool to have an emphatically touch-based, unitasky, one-window-at-all-times interface like the iPad, but still... For that moment when I really do need more than one window at a time and that I can simply switch over and to use a second usage mode and have access to those apps too. I would love to travel with just one device instead of having two of them at the same time.
Well, I think...
Yeah, but I think...
Go ahead, Oliver. Sorry. Oliver first.
All right. So I think Apple should... I mean, I see the point that there's certainly still a lot of things that you can't do with an iPad or that are very awkward to do with an iPad, but I think Apple should just fix these issues from the point of view, how would you do this with a device like the iPad and not throw in like a switch mode that brings you back to macOS 10? And I think that's basically what's wrong with Windows 8 and the Microsoft approach is that they always think like, you know, how can we do this new thing in a way that we've been doing it for the last 25 years? And they've been announcing tablets for, I don't know how long, 20
More
years
than,
or something,
well, at least 10,
every
yeah.
year. And they're like, you know, this year is going to be the tablet PC year. Well, and never, if you walk into a Microsoft store and play with a tablet PC, you know why it's not working. You know, it's not the immersive experience that you have on an iPad. If you look at people who are using an iPad, there's almost as if they are diving into the iPad, right? And if you look at PC thing...
Does Apple keep the iPad pure and not try to make it what Andy's looking for? Or does Apple try to find ways to make natively, as you say, an iPad more like a full-time computer?
I think they have to fix a couple of issues. And one of the biggest gripes I have with the iPad is that you can't move data from one app to another. Yeah. I don't think so. It's just like, you know, I think it's something that there's the basics are there. You know, if you look at the camera roll, it's sort of, you know, points the way of where this should go. But you know, you know, they need to fix that. And there's a couple of those things that
you
need to
fix. So you could have, say, a document folder that would look like the camera roll and that other apps.
For example, and it's something like that.
I mean, you know what? That would be a big improvement, I think.
And and so that you don't have to have like one app that does everything, instead of having like what the basic idea is of the iPad and the iOS is that you have like lots of small helper apps.
Unix style.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's Unix style. It's just like, you know, do one thing but do it well.
Right.
And so if you, for example, if you want to edit web pages on an iPad, you have to have like an app that does text editing. It does HTML stuff, you know, and it does FTP and it does, you know, SFTP and all these things. And they all need to be in that one app. Instead of that, you could have like, you know, a really good text editor and a really good FTP client and a really good photo editing
now
app.
Now you're describing a Macintosh, though.
Well, yeah, but, you know,
the Air is the compromise, right?
No, because have you ever tried using an iPad with a Bluetooth keyboard?
You might as well get a laptop then.
Yes, yes. Well, but I still want to have like this immersive touch interface thing. So,
what if we put touch on the
OS? That's what you should try. I mean, it feels totally weird if you put like these USB the Bluetooth keyboards where you can stick up your iPad like and it looks like an MacBook Air suddenly and then you start working and then you have to reach up and go there. It's totally unnatural.
Like to do it's when totally they introduced the iPad, he said we didn't make a touch screen because your hand would not really find that as a natural way to interact.
Andy, though, uses a keyboard all the time, right? Andy?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I'm traveling for less than a couple of days, I will take my iPad with a Bluetooth keyboard, and yeah, that works incredibly well. The problem is that oftentimes I'm working on projects where, as a matter of fact, I often use my iPhone as a second screen on my iPad, because I'll be writing something in a Dropbox-based text editor, and then I'll need to check something or double-check my facts or make sure my figures are correct. I will literally then have the same document open on my iPhone on a little easel like next to my iPad so that I can be looking something up on that document in one pane and then looking it up and then actually make my text editing changes on this one. So there are definitely so many operations that don't really work well in a one-window interface.
So that's your answer, right? Is get a second iPad if you need a second screen.
Get a special hinged case like this. Basically build Microsoft's Courier prototype in iOS.
And by then you'll have reinvented the laptop computer.
I really want to say one thing that I thought was really interesting, though. I'm not necessarily saying that Apple should create a dual boot or double mode iPad, but I linked to a CNET's article about Windows 8 coming to running natively on ARM processors. Again, the multi-windowed traditional interface.
Right.
And as a way of, in 140 characters or less, expressing my enthusiasm or my interest in this topic, I said, well, think of it this way. Imagine that Apple sold the next iPad, and for $99 more, it could run macOS apps as well. Wouldn't you buy it? And I got 100 responses saying, nope, never, it would ruin the whole tablet experience for me. I would never do that. And I'm like, no, seriously.
I was one of those.
I was just joking around. But if $99 more, this iPad works exactly the way that it does right now. For $99 more, it would also run macOS apps. You would not shell out. Nope. It's the purity of the iOS. We compromised by the... Oh, you lying sack of... Oh, you would totally buy that. This is ideologically unsound is the name for that for that reaction to iOS on the iPad. Apple would never cannibalize MacBook Air sales to that degree to actually do that. But anybody who says they would not spend $99 to run macOS apps, if it did not intrude upon the purity of the iOS experience in any way, you are lying. You're a lying liar whose lying mouth is filled with lies.
We're gonna get to our picks of the week, our OS 10 and iOS tips as well. But a couple of real quick stories. One, according to 9to5 Mac, more double resolution display images found in both iTunes U and iBooks 2 files. In fact, there's even a template here that says, image that says iBook ribbon, for instance, iPhone 2X. So I think the drumbeat's getting pretty loud for a Retina or at least a higher res iPad should be announced this month or February next month, I guess, and ship in March, I would think. You guys agree? You probably can't say anything because you're probably NDA'd, embargoed up the hilt, right?
And they don't tell us.
Well, I was going to say, what you think they tell us stuff like that? I mean, yes, we're under NDA.
I was giving you a chance to do what Andy does, which is nod knowingly and smile.
What's the name of the dog?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The pro.
Buster.
If I knew, I couldn't
stupid
say.
Questions I can't answer on camera. You're such a good boy.
I think, though, that's pretty exciting. I think we will see a new iPad in the next couple of months.
The thing about the NDA is we are not even allowed to tell you that we don't know.
Right.
That's right. That's a
right.
Good point.
It's amazing. They've got you guys tied up in a knot. Yeah. That's one story. The other story, this is funny, from Apple Insider. Apparently, Apple, sometimes when they hire new engineers, make them work on decoy products for a lengthy period of time while management vets their trustworthiness. This is coming from Adam Leshinsky's new book, Inside Apple, further corroborated by an Apple engineer by his appearance at LinkedIn. The engineer said, a friend of mine is a senior engineer. He works on or did work on fake products, I'm sure, for the first part of his career, and interviewed for 9 months before they let them actually touch a real product. How about that?
That's what they're doing with the $97.7 billion.
Yeah, making fake products. Wouldn't it be funny if like one of those fake products were really, really good? And fine. And finally, love Wayne Coyne, love Flaming Lips, one of my favorite bands. They've got a new piece which will only be up for a week on SoundCloud featuring Erica Badu and Biz Markie and Siri. It's called Now I Understand. Are you playing it? You're not playing it. Are you going to play my sound?
Wait.
Let me start over again now. We got to start because it's right at the beginning, I think. How do I start over on a SoundCloud? I don't know.
I don't understand.
Here, this is the beginning of the piece.
Wayne. Wayne. I don't understand. The moon, the stars, and the sun. The moon, the stars, and the sun.
Wayne Coyne is great. We actually had him on a call for a couple once. He's a complete tech buff. Flaming Lips is wonderful. And you can find this for a week if you look for the Flaming Lips on SoundCloud. Understand. Apparently at some point she tells Wayne how to hide bodies.
I don't understand.
It sounds very depressing. Yeah?
Wayne.
I'm sure it'll pick up.
I don't understand. The moon, the stars, and the sun.
Let's skip ahead. Let's see. Yeah, it gets a little more. It's a spacey kind of a thing. Anyway, I love the Flaming Lips, and I thought it was cool that an actual real band. I mean, there's a lot of Siri mashups. An actual real band would do a Siri mashup. It's cool.
Yes, even to a German.
Somebody in the chat room said depressing, even to a German.
Even to a German. Yes. I think it's more depressing that the beer is freezing. Now that's depressing.
I can't remember what the award show was, but they did their tribute to Steve Jobs when they did Revolution. The whole thing was filmed with iPads.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Filmed with an iPad. That's the worst camera ever.
Not filmed with an iPad. Filmed with iPads.
iPads.
Several of them. They had iPads set up sort of like on music stands, I think. And maybe they were working from those, but then they were also taking the camera angles from those too.
When we were at CES, by the way, we saw the Beatles Love, and it was just amazing. Have you seen that?
No, I'd love to go see it.
Nothing to do with anything, but I just... I know, for some reason, I think of Beatles and Apple. I don't know why. I just... They go together like...
Lama.
Let's talk a little bit about our good friends at Audible.com, and then we'll come back with your tips and picks and all of that stuff. Audible, of course, is the ultimate audio bookstore. 100,000. I'm sure it's more than that now. It goes up all the time. 100,000 titles in all different categories. Great books that you can listen to and enjoy on your iPhone, your iPad, your iPod, your Zune, your Kindle, if it's got audio. You know, most GPS, hundreds of devices, and such great books. Really, the challenge is when you first come here, what do I listen to? Now, I mentioned that Adam Leshinsky book. That is now out on Audible. So if you want to you know, kind of get the inside story on Apple. I haven't read it yet, but it is next on my Audible list. Inside Apple, How America's Most Admired and Secretive Company Really Works. Anybody here read that yet? I think this is going to be very interesting. Anyway, that could be an Audible book for you. But I bet you Andy Iannacco has another pick. Andy?
Yeah, I'm still working my way through the Michael Caine book that I recommended last time.
Loved that.
But it's great to have like a second Audible book that's like a collection of short stories, because if you just need something right. that will get you from start to finish, like inside like a half hour, 20 minutes. And so I've been working my way through a series called The Voice from the Edge, which is collections of Harlan Ellison's short stories.
Love him.
Yeah. And a few days ago, I bought Voice from the Edge, Volume 4, which has, I think, was my favorite Harlan Ellison story, which is The Death Bird. But each collection, I think there are five or six collections. Each one has about a good dozen and a half stories in it. So it's really cool. Just dip in, dip out of it. It's you're good to go no matter what, how long or short your flight is, or how long the delay is until you can board. And so the good thing about these collections of Harlan Ellison stuff is that it's not always the exact same narrator. They have like about a half dozen pretty much in each one of these collections. So you don't get sort of lulled into the you get to stay in that place where you're still sort of fascinated by the tone and the delivery of right. a brand new narrator you haven't heard before.
So. That's just so much. It's so hard to pick. There's and for young people too. This is a great source of books for little kids and young adults. A Wrinkle in Time. What a great book! I read that when I was probably in seventh or eighth grade. Remember that?
Such love a good that book. So who reads it?
You want to hear a little bit of it? Hope Davis.
I love Hope Davis.
Yeah, it's got to be a female narrator
because that's what they'll be saying next. Not mother, but them. Everybody else. I wish father.
Oh, this is such a good book. And so there's a great one for the teens. Good. I just tell you, if you're not an Audible member, you got to find out about it. It's easy. It's free for the first month. Go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up for that gold account. Your first month's free. Your first credit, which is usually a book, almost all the books are one credit, is free. You can cancel at any time. The book is yours to keep forever. It's just fantastic. You got to try it if you haven't. We've just given you three great reads, and that's just scratching the surface. audible.com/MacBreak I think we already had our iOS tip. Get PDF pen. Well, get iStop.
I was just going to say there's another pretty awesome iOS.
You want to do a tip?
Well, I was going to say Boinks. iStop Motion is pretty amazing.
We should get a little demo. Do you have it on there?
Yes.
You know,
one of
the things that's very cool about it is that I don't have to use the iPad camera to do my stop motion. I could take pictures on the very good iPhone camera,
mm-hmm.
and it automatically copies over to iStop Motion. So it's kind of, you know, the iStop Motion has been out for a long time for the Mac, and I love it. But this is great because you put this on a tripod, and you have the controller is over here, and you can move around. And I think this is just so much of an easier way to do stop motion.
You might even be able to show it, but where do I have to point it?
Do we have it over the shoulder? We do, right here. Put it right here. Let me get this out of the way.
Both of us did demos on the stage at Macworld, which they...
Isn't that challenging?
It went really well. Okay. And they said they put those up on video. I think you can stream those. So, and they were really good. They gave an amazing demo.
So we're now actually connected to the remote iPhone.
There's one out there. Oh, that's great.
Holding, and you get to set like the focus point and the exposure.
Point it at us.
Yes.
Yeah, let's see ourselves.
Yes, let's see ourselves.
Let's see ourselves. So what's cool about that is the phone is static and stays where it wants, and you can move around, adjust your little characters or creations with the iPad. I think that's so great.
And it's also it does have a much better video camera, right?
Oh, yeah,
but
much.
For the if you you can also use the built-in cameras, of course.
So did you record a clip just there?
No, you just press the button here, and then it captures the HD image and transfers it over the wireless.
So you move your figure or whatever, and then you do another one.
Yes.
And it's all on iStop Motion. It's on the iPad. That's really cool.
And it's also really
look at
cool
this.
For
this is how you line it up, too, which is really great.
Yeah, you see
the ghost
overlay.
Yeah.
The ghost, yes. And it's also nice for time lapses. So if it ever snows outside, you can sort of
watch. We're gonna this is something that kids. Oh, you could do a time lapse with it.
Yes.
Can you do automatic time lapse?
Yes. You can just have it capture one frame every 3 seconds for the built-in cameras, or every 5 seconds for the remote cameras.
Awesome. So what I do is I put I have a, actually a clip that I can mount this on. Mm-hmm. I put it there pointing out at the snow.
Yeah.
If I were in Munich.
Petaluma.
And then I set up iStopMotion on my iPad, mm-hmm. and I go into the stop motion, and then I can just let it go.
Yes.
Oh, and that's very
just,
cool.
Takes a
how long? Well, I mean, what happens if the iPad sleeps? Or the...
It actually turns off the sleep while it's capturing.
Okay.
So it's not
so
going to fall asleep.
Plug it in and plug the phone in. That mm-hmm. way you won't drain the battery. That's cool.
Yeah.
Great iOS tip. How much is iStopMotion?
It's $4.99 for now. $4.99.
I got to buy it. Boinks really does great stuff. I love Boinks. Thank you very much, Oliver. A Mac OS 10 tip, or actually a Mac tip in general, Andy and Octo.
This is a quick one, but it's one of my favorite ones, where in Lion, Launchpad debuted, which gives us the springboard type app launcher that you get from the iPad. I've never really used it because I still use Spotlight as my app launcher, but there's a way you can get that sort of discoverability. Sometimes you forget you have an app installed until you actually go through your applications folder. So what you can do is, this is an oldie but a goodie, you just simply drag the applications folder directly into your dock over on the right-hand side there. You can drag arbitrary folders and files, and then after you've got that installed, if you just click on that folder, it'll pop up and you'll see these big high resolution icons of all the apps you have installed. It looks really a lot like a Launchpad, and then you can launch it directly from there. And so that's another reason why I just don't use Launchpad, because I just think this is a lot handier and a lot simpler. I don't have to remember the key sequence in order to get to that space. So. Quick, simple. I like it.
And you want to tell us what these... Okay, we could actually take some guesses from the chat room about Andy's desktop background. It was it says CCCP on his helmet, which means he's a Soviet Union somebody. Is it Yuri? Was it Yuri Gagarin? That's everybody's guess.
Unfortunately, Leo, because you are an employee... an operative in the TWiT network, you are ineligible to win the free Buick. But that is, in fact, the correct guess.
Is it actually him?
It is it's a really nice painting that came
across. Beautiful. Yuri online. Alexeyevich Gagarin, Sputnik Vostok.
Yep. Hero of the Soviet Union.
Yeah. That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
That's you, really, you're a sleeper?
Huh?
Hmm?
No, spy? Me. No. Of course not, comrade. Yeah, I was put here by Soviet Union, and now I don't know what to do. I just hang out. They said, you know,
do television.
We'll tell you when to take over American government, and I haven't heard from them in years. So I just do podcasts. Why not? So let's do Peak of Week, Mr. Ken Ray.
Okay. This is something that I got at Macworld, and I got the very basic one, but made by a Donut or a Donut. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's called Jot, and it's a stylus for your iPad or your iPhone. The really cool thing about it, and I hope you can actually see something. See that plastic disc at the end?
Yes.
That's actually the thing that acts as your cursor. But what's really awesome about it, and I know I won't be able to show it, right in the middle of that. Oh, there it is.
Ooh.
There are crosshairs right at that little point. And that shows you basically where, that lets you center what you're trying to draw. So I can't remember the name of the one. I think it was maybe the Pogo, and I didn't mean them no offense. It was great for what it had at the time. But, you know, you go to draw on that or draw with that or write it with it, and it almost feels like finger painting. The cool thing about, which is, of course, what drawing with your finger feels like too. The cool thing about the crosshairs on here is it shows you exactly where it is. So I used to sketch and doodle all the time, and I, haven't for a long time. But
then
this,
you took an arrow to the knee, right?
Something like that. But then this actually, that little crosshair thing, which I guess you can't see, really
no, we
gives
can
you
see
a,
it.
A,
oh, yeah.
Okay, so it gives you like a really precise, like I know that that's exactly right. Where my line's going to be, so I can go ahead and set a fine line and do all the little doodling that I used to do on paper. So I like it for that. And I, tried signing my name in one of my art programs just to see if I could, and it works just like a pen. The one that they're coming out with, and this was one of the reasons I didn't actually get to see it very much, is because every time I approached their booth at Macworld, you couldn't get near it.
Right.
It was so incredibly deep. But I think they have, I can't remember if it's called the Jot Touch is coming out, but it's actually going to be a Bluetooth stylus, which starts... to me, to sound a little involved, but I'm not an artist. I'm not,
Well, the idea is that I guess they use the Bluetooth for pressure sensitivity, right?
They use the Bluetooth for pressure sensitivity, but they've also got buttons that you can assign on it. So if you wanted to, you know, switch from this thing in the application that you're doing to this one, so maybe I have two nibs on a pen that I use constantly, or maybe I'm wanting to switch colors really quickly, or maybe I want to go from draw to erase. You can assign the buttons on it, and then it's just, they're right here. I'm sorry. So they'd be like right there, basically. So where you're holding the pen, there's going to be this place where you can just, you know, click between these two buttons. And so if you're a professional or somebody who, you know, considers yourself an artist as opposed to someone who doodles, that one's going to be really cool. I think they say it ships in a couple of months. And the only thing I heard about price is under $100, which I'm guessing means $99. I don't know. But this, I mean, maybe it was a show special. I don't know. It was like, I think it was $20.
Wow.
And came in several different colors. And I just got the basic model because really what I wanted to do was just be able to like doodle like I used to with pen and paper. So that would be my that would be mine for this week.
Of course, I'm sure it works with PDF Pen Pro just fine.
Absolutely.
Of course it does.
Would that be an alternative to using a keyboard for you guys?
Not me.
Isn't it funny? Because when Steve Jobs announced the iPad, the first thing he said is styluses suck. We will never do a tablet with a stylus. So what is the whole ecosystem of third-party styluses pop up?
Well, because artists love the iPad. Their dream is to have a Wacom Cintiq tablet where they let them draw directly on the screen. And if you give them a $499 device that could conceivably work that way, that is, if I can tell if someone is an artist or not by the fact that their first question to me after they meet me is, do you know if Apple's ever going to do a pressure-sensitive version of the iPad? Because they absolutely want to get that variable pen width. They also love having lots of buttons on the pen so that they can simply not just switch from like pencil to erase, but actually stuff their favorite commands inside those buttons. So that's going to be the fact that Windows 8 supports pretty much any input device that anybody wants to make. I do think that's a potential vulnerability for Apple, because the art community, or at least for the art community, because if there are great Windows 8 apps that inherently understand pressure sensitivity and allow artists to get a machine of that complexity, that kind of detail and that kind of real world art techniques on an inexpensive device, I'm not sure that they'll think that iOS is that big of an advantage to make up for it.
By the way, that was another one of the best of show winners at Macworld iWorld, the Jot Touch. Just looking at all of them, including Boink's iStop Motion for the iPad and Smile Software's PDF Pen. What else is on there? Just some other good ones. I see.
You might be selecting something that I'm going to choose as a pick of the week.
Okay, don't look. Don't look. I think I am. I have a feeling. Andy Yanako, why don't you give it to it? Give it to me, baby. Your pick of the week.
Oh, only to you and only you, Leo. this is an Edmund Scientific monocle.
It's an Ola clip. I know the Ola clip.
There you go.
Yeah.
Coolest thing ever. There are a couple of different companies that had really interesting accessory lenses for the iPhone. This is probably my favorite of the bunch because it's just so cleverly done. It just naturally clips onto the iPhone over the lens like this. And one side of it, and as you can see from the screen behind me, if you have it clipped on one way, you just get simply a wide-angle lens. If you clip it on the other way, you get a fisheye lens. So you get like infinite range of field, like that. And the other way cool thing is if you actually unscrew the fisheye, the wide-angle lens, and put that back on, there's another little lens behind that, and it becomes a super macro lens, just like that.
Ooh.
I don't know if you can see it exactly. So it really is cool. As a matter of fact, for the past two or three days, I've been out places just testing them out to see how good they are at what they do. It's really, really good. Here's my friend's dog shot with the fisheye lens, because if you want real 3D action, a dog's snout looking, there you go.
Oh my God.
that's how you keep up with it. It really is the only way to like shoot a dog like that, because this is like a compact kitchen. So it's not as though you can like stay 8 feet away to keep them in the frame at all times. Obviously, when you're shooting video on the iPhone, it actually digitally zooms in a little bit, so you don't see like that circular fisheye effect. For pictures, It's nice and sharp, either in wide or fisheye mode. The only difficulty is that there's a lot of distortion. I mean, even more so, more than you would expect from like a camera lens like that. But the cool thing is that it's simple to put it. You don't have to like hard mount this onto your iPhone. It's a simple little thing you can carry in a pocket. They even give you a little like a little drawstring case for it, and it's only $69.99. So it's not cheap. It's not as cheap as cheaper fisheye little rubber band straps that I've seen for the iPhone. But it's definitely within that range of wanting to. It's definitely within the touch of an impulse buy sort of thing. Also, anytime that this is the solution to the problem of I want to take a picture of my friends like at this diner together at the table, and I don't want to have to back up through the window to get there. Really, really great thing. I'm very, very happy with it. It has its limitations, which you will find out soon enough once you get it. But it's very, very useful, particularly for the $69 you're spending on it. And you can find it at olloclip.com, olloclip.com.
I will vouch for that. I have one and I love it. I have a lot of fun with it. In fact, people on my various feeds knew when I got one because there was all of a sudden all these macro photos of things. Look, a coffee bean.
Do my nose hairs need a trim?
Exactly. You know, we don't normally make our special guests do picks, but Gene McDonald from Smile Software has one. And I, you know what? I want it.
I didn't know if we...
This is the
only thing I actually got to see at the show because we were, you know, to bring it back around to the beginning,
we were
so busy.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine is helping me outfit my office to be more ergonomically correct, and I'm going to have some... I want a workspace that I could stand at, too.
Right.
And so I went... I noticed that Anthro was actually going to be at the show. I'd pretty much picked out this desk already. This is a console unit. I think it's down at the Fit Desk. But anyway, it's... They're obviously really well known for their quality, but I had never seen one in person, and they're not cheap. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really want to order it sight unseen. So at 3:30 on Saturday, a half hour before the show closed, I finally got to see one, and I liked it better than I thought, even better than
I thought
it would.
You know what I liked though, and that we saw this. We actually shot it for iPad today. This desk.
Yes.
You raise and lower it so you can sit or stand.
Well, that's, you know.
Does this do that too?
Well, this is not electrical. It's mechanical.
This has a button.
This you just pop up. So you can pop up the centerpiece of the desk. This is called the console. But anyway, either way, I mean, I was attracted to that too, although somebody, my friend who knows a lot about this stuff, said to me, well, you know, that's electrical and...
What
you're
if the power goes out?
Susceptible to breaking down.
Right, that's true.
And
so you could do it by hand. I mean, you've got enough elbow grease.
It's not the whole desk doesn't get pulled up, and it was great. I did get to use it for a little bit at the show or play with it. But the tip is, I said, well, do you have a show special? Because, again, I said this, I think they don't even put the price on the website.
It's so expensive if you have to ask. You actually have to call them. It really
I think
is a little
it's
frustrating.
About $1,200, the one that I want. But,
the,
you know, if you sit at your desk all the time.
$3,500.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Well, see, I'm getting the bargain desk. Let my bosses know that. Anyway, I said, do you have a show special? That was what I didn't want to miss. And he said, well, you need to go to Facebook and like them, which I did.
Okay.
And you can get 30% off.
Oh, that's huge.
It's huge. So if anybody
that's
out there has been thinking about getting a desk from Anthro, I think it's February 9th is when the deal is over.
Like them right now.
Like them over on Facebook and check it out. And also, I like doing this tip because they're from Oregon. And they're neighbors of mine in Portland, Oregon.
I love Anthro desks. I really think that they're state of the art. But don't tell my staff about that. Okay. Anthro, ANTHRO.com. But somehow I got in their radiology division.
Starting a new division here at
twits.com. Yes, the X-ray will be setting up in the corner. Anybody wants to come and find out what their bones look like, just come on over.
But that is the only thing I got to see. I wanted to see the jot pen, and I'm glad that Ken
that
was
looks
saying
cool, doesn't it?
That he had a hard time even seeing it because I wouldn't have been able to stand around at all. Yeah.
I was really pleased with that pen, too. I was trying to do cross-hatching with it and just getting nice parallel lines like on the iPad app so easily.
That's nice.
I tried drawing like crosshairs with it and then trying to see how accurately could I like then draw a circle around the center of those crosshairs. So for accuracy, I've never seen a stylus like this.
Wow. Neato. Oliver, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but do you have anything that you liked that you saw maybe at Macworld?
There's a couple of things, but interesting for me was that compared to last year, that people were really putting things out there with that were quite clever. So one of the things I noticed was the iKeyboard. I don't know if you... Oh, you can pull it up on your... So it's like...
iKeyboard.com.
Yeah.
All right.
It tries to bring the tactile feed.
Wait a minute. It's a physical thing that goes on top of your
iPad. I've got one in my bag if you want to see
it. Yeah.
All right. Just
have it? Go ahead and get it. Let's take a look at it.
I got to say, I'm looking forward to hearing his opinion on it because I saw it and I thought it was terrible.
But it's kind of like a weird idea. It's like rubber?
It's a sticky overlay that gives you like bubble-like keycaps over the virtual keyboard. And number one, there's nothing designed in here that makes it easy to apply correctly and line it up over the keys. Secondly, I just couldn't type on it. It was just such a weird...
Well, Oliver's...
Yeah. But it looks so cool.
It does look cool.
Well, you know, it's interesting...
This is a physical thing right on top of it.
Yeah,
it wasn't that hard to place.
No, it just sticks on that.
Right on.
And it's,
okay. Look at that. Like, so you place it on top of the keyboard to make sure it kind of matches... You're right. That's a little tricky. All right. And now you type. And these feel like they have keycaps.
Yes.
And they go down. Wow.
Well, I don't know if it's... I mean, I might agree with Andy. I might even agree with Andy that you... I don't know if it's really good to use, but I think it's a clever idea. I mean, that's what... Yeah. That's what gets me is that if people are, you know, they try to solve some of the problems of the iPad with a clever solution, even if it doesn't work, maybe, you know.
What the hell language do you speak? All the keys are in the wrong place. It should be Q-U-E-R-T-Y. What's the Z doing there?
That's a German keyboard, though.
Do you not have a Y?
Oh, you can switch to the English keyboard and then.
Yeah, I knew it all along.
Oh, yeah.
So that is how much was that?
I don't know. Remember? I got it.
iKeyboard.com. You can get it in black or white. A shipment is currently on its way to Amazon.
Oh, interesting.
There's another version of this sort of idea, the idea of having a tactile overlay that appeared on Kickstarter a number of months ago. It's one of those projects where they were looking for $10,000. They got a little over $200,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. This one is made out of rubber, so you can easily fold it down and then fold it back up again into place when you need it and you don't need it. Also, according to the video, which is just promises at this point, it actually attaches using the iPad 2's magnet, so it automatically aligns itself. So I haven't actually used one myself. That's why I kind of ran to that booth when I saw it, because I thought this was the TouchFire actually in the field I actually play with. So it's interesting. All I can say is that I saw a couple of different keyboards that I actually rather liked, even the smaller size ones. This was the one where I just had each keycap on the iKeyboard is like a bubble of like clear plastic, and my fingers just did not want to register that as typing.
Right,
I just couldn't make it work.
So I wonder what these guys did with the $201,000.
Sucker!
Bought beer. But now the beer froze.
Hey, everybody. It's been such a great show. I thank you so much for being here. Gene McDonald from Smile Software, and you've got the Smile Mug. We've got a few of those in the studio, and I love to use those. Thank you for being
here.
Thank you for
us.
Great software, too, all along.
I appreciate it.
A text expander saved my life many and many a time. So I appreciate your being
Always
here.
Always fun to be here.
Also to Oliver Breidenbach, whenever you're in town, we love getting you in from Germany, from Munich, but he's also with Boinx, BOINX.com, creators of iStopMotion, among other programs for both the Mac and now for the iPad. Andy Anatko is at the Chicago Sun-Times. His website is www.cwob.com. He and Yuri are available for, performances anytime.
You're in the two-man Soyuz capsule.
Yeah.
You're definitely not spying. We are doing peace research.
Peace. We research for peace. And Mac OS Ken Ray, always great to have you. MacOSKen.com for his daily look at Macintosh news and his six-minute rant this week on the New York Times article at MacOSKen on Twitter. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Let's see, if I add 8, I think, for UTC, that's 1900 UTC at twit.tv. But you don't have to watch live because we make audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv. So you can download any episode. I think that's all I have to say. Twit Photo is coming up next in just a moment. I thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time. Now you get back to work, because Mac Break is broke.